AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
And are you still in Texas?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you were born and raised?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, my dad was in the military, so I moved around a little bit.
Yeah, I remember reading that in your book. Was your dad a World War II veteran?
Yes.
Do you know where exactly he was stationed at, Europe or the Pacific?
No, he fought in North Africa, and then he was in the Anzio Beach invasion, and pretty much was in continuous combat for about 3 months, all the way through Italy.
Wow.
So that's where he was.
And where did, soon after he came back from his deployment, were you born?
Yeah. I mean, I was born in 47, so within a couple of years after the war, I was born.
And growing up, did you talk to your dad a lot about his military service or ask him questions or ask for stories or anything like that?
He didn't like to talk about it. You know, he told me enough to kind of shut me up, but I didn't really get much out of him as far as I think war is just terrible, and the guys just kind of want to go move on, and that's pretty much where he was. Well, he got out of the military just long enough for my mother to have me, and then the Army realized that they had let too many experienced veterans go, and my father had won a battlefield commission in Anzio Beach. So they needed officers that had some battle experience to be able to train the next generation of soldiers. And it wasn't long after he went back in that Korean War happened. So it was a good thing. He didn't participate in the Korean War. But that was it.
Do you find, is that something that everybody of that generation or age group has in common where they don't really like to talk about things they experienced? Or is that pretty much anybody who's been in those situations, whether it's old or young?
I think it's common that people who've been in war don't want to really talk about that. It's a pretty miserable existence, and I think that trying to get away from it a little bit makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. You yourself also have military service, is that correct?
That's correct.
What branch?
Oh, yeah. I went in the Army right out of college, and I was in the military in the Army for about 9.5 years, and then I got out, stayed in reserves for a while, and then, but I didn't retire.
Really quick, Lanny, I do have one follow-up question. I'm going to give you a proper introduction for everybody out there listening. Hi, my name is Chris. This is Chitash, and today I am joined by author and founder of the Mental Management System, Lanny Basham. Lanny, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Did I pronounce your last name correctly, by the way?
It's like Basham in the nose. That's the way to remember how to pronounce it.
Like that, Basham in the nose. We're talking about military service, and with your military service, is that kind of where you started obtaining the skills of, rifle shooting and being a marksman? Is that kind of where it was born?
No, I started shooting when I was 12. So my dad was in the military, but the army, I was a terrible athlete, and I was kind of slow, short, and uncoordinated, and I was not going to be successful at baseball, football, basketball—the traditional sports of the time. I'm in sixth grade, and we're studying Olympics in school. Must have been Olympic year or something. And the teacher makes a statement in class. You know, it's possible somebody in this class could be an Olympic champion someday. I wonder if you have the best chance. And this little boy sitting next to me jumps right up and says, well, I don't know who'd have the best chance, but I know for sure who'd have the worst chance, Lanny. And that kind of ticked me off. And I went home and told my parents about this and said, I'm not good at anything. I mean, I was an okay student. I was going to pass my classes, but I wasn't good at anything. And it wasn't long after that, a friend of mine invited me to a rifle club meeting, and we didn't have any guns in the house. We didn't hunt or anything. And so I asked him, I said, well, tell me about rifle shooting. And he says, well, it's Olympic sport. And I said, I don't think so. I said, I've never heard of the rifle shooting in the Olympics. He says, oh yeah, it's an Olympic sport. And so I went to rifle club meeting, and I asked him tell me about rifle shooting. I said, how tall do you have to be a rifle shooter? Because I wasn't all that tall. And oh, that doesn't matter. Well, how strong do you have to be? And he said, the rifles aren't that heavy. And I said, well, how fast do you have to be? He said, well, why are you asking me these questions? I said, Citius, Altius, Fortius, the Olympic motto. I mean, I've gone to the library and read some books about Olympic athletes, he says, I just thought all sport Olympic sports were like that. He said, oh, not rifle shooting. A rifle shooting is the only Olympic sport where you're trying to make the body stop. I thought, well, hello. I had trouble making it go, so maybe I could try this. And so they let me shoot, and I wasn't good at it. I wasn't bad at it. I was average at it. I'd never been average in anything else I'd ever tried. And so they met once a week, and my father took me the next week, and I was all excited, and they canceled the program. And I was super disappointed. And my father told me, so why are you frustrated? I said, well, I'm not going to get to shoot. And my father says, no, son, they're not going to get to shoot. That doesn't mean you're not going to get to shoot. And give me a couple of days, and we'll see what I can come up with. And he got the keys to an indoor range very similar to what we were using at the rifle meeting. And he would pick me up from school and take me to the range and begin to teach me how to shoot. The only problem was my father didn't know anything about target shooting. I mean, he knew about service rifle shooting, war, but he found out that there was a marksmanship unit at the base he was stationed at, and he would go to the marksmanship unit, get information about shooting, and come back and teach me. And there was no other shooters on the range, so you know, there's a lot of drama with other people, and most people learn how to do something in a group and a club and things like that. But I started out just with my dad and me, and my dad was a solution-based coach, meaning that he told me, he said, there's only one best way to do anything, and we're going to learn everything we can about that one best way. And when I shot a bad shot, he didn't say, here's what you're doing wrong. He always said, well, here's what we need to do, or here's what you need to do. And later on, he started asking me, what do you think you should do? So I was always thinking about the solution. And we had never heard the word self-image, but I would find out much later that every time you think about a solution, your self-image grows. Every time you think about the problem, self-image shrinks. And so he was actually building my self-image even when I shot a bad shot, because we were talking about the solution all the time, and that was very important to me. The other thing that happened is that my dad spent so much time at the marksmanship unit that when the guy that was running that program rotated out, they asked my father if he would run the program, and he did. And he was very good at this. And he was really good at building people. And he caught the attention of the Army Marksmanship Unit that run the Army's big marksmanship unit at Fort Benning. And the reason that was important to me was that the United States of America dominated Olympic rifle shooting at that time in history, and all of our medalists were in the Army, stationed at the United States Army Marksmanship Unit, where my dad worked. So I went from training with nobody else on the range to having access to the best in the world, and I took advantage of it. And I found out they all had the same story. They all went to college that had shooting sports program, rifle team, and they all made All-American. And if you take ROTC and you graduate from college and you go in the Army and you're an All-American, you get an automatic tryout at the Army Marksmanship Unit International Rifle Team. And so that's I knew when I was graduated from high school, I knew exactly what my path was. I wanted to go to the Olympics, and the Army was the ticket, because shooting is the second most expensive sport in the Olympics to train for, and I didn't have that kind of money, and my parents weren't wealthy, and so but the marksmanship unit, you're in the Army, so they pay you a salary, and they pay for your bullets and pay for your travel and pay for your coaching and give you an opportunity if you can make the team. And so I applied myself, and I went to state school in Texas and majored in rifle shooting, and they gave me a business degree. And I spent most of my time on the range, but I managed to graduate, got married in college, and went in the Army, and was assigned the Army Marksmanship Unit, and that was where I was given the opportunity to compete, and it was it it was a good time because I was able, my first 3 years, I was able to travel around the world and compete. I made the world championship team in 1970, and then we held the world championships. We hold the world championships every 4 years in my sport, like the Olympics. The Olympics are held every 4 years, and so every other year there's a world title on the line.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
So by the time the Olympics rolled around, I'd been in the marksmanship unit for about 3 years. And I managed to make the Olympic team. But during that three-year period, I hadn't really won anything. I managed to get in the top four, which is no small feat because I had to go around a couple of world champions to get in the top four. And but I wasn't winning, and my teammates were winning, but I wasn't winning. And I didn't. Something was missing, but I didn't know what it was. And I never believed that, or never thought that it might be the mental game. Back in those days, we thought mental toughness—that's what we called it. You could handle the pressure. It was something you had. It wasn't something you could learn. And so I wasn't trying, we weren't trying to learn it. We didn't have any classes on the mental game or discussions on the mental game or training on the mental game at all. And it was all about skill and experience, skill and experience, that's it. And so I managed to make the Olympic team, but I didn't win the Olympics in 1972. Because I didn't have a mental game, I just couldn't handle the pressure. And, but my teammate was the best shooter in the world, and he wins the gold medal, sets a world record. I shoot a bad score for me, but I was the most surprised person in the tournament when they gave me a silver medal for that bad score. But I came home frustrated because, don't get me wrong, a silver medal is 10 times better than a bronze, and a bronze medal is 10 times better than no medal at all. And just making an Olympic team in anything is a big deal. But I had not won anything in 3 years, and that was frustrating me. And I discovered why I wasn't winning. I couldn't. There was a mental component out there, and I wanted to find out how to fix that. And I refused to believe that you couldn't learn how to do anything. You can learn how to do anything. You would have got to find the right teacher. Well, there were no teachers, and my teammates could figure it out, but they weren't going to help me because they had a shoot against me next week, and they're going to keep all their secrets to themselves. And but I thought, well, I'm an Olympic silver medalist, and back in those days, we didn't have cell phones; we had answering machines. So I had the names of a couple of world champions in other sports and Olympic gold medalists in other sports. And so I would call them on the phone and leave a message, something like, you don't know me, but I'm a silver medalist in the Olympics, and you're a gold medalist in the Olympics, and I need your help. Please call me back. And they always did. And I think they called me back because I had a silver medal and were curious about how they could help. And I just wanted to know what they knew about the medal game. And so for about 2 years, I was on the phone several nights a week talking to Olympic and world champions in other sports to find out what's going on, because the rifle world weren't going to help me. But and I understood that. I understood why. But, you know, the great interesting thing about that is that if you know one track athlete, they'll give you the name and the phone number of champions, other track champions. And if you know one archer, they'll give you the phone number of other archers, or world champions and archers. And the United States has won a lot of gold medals. And so I managed to talk to an awful lot of people. And nobody had the whole story, but everybody had a piece of it. And so I just connected the dots, and I realized there's a system to this, and I upgraded to the system and started winning. So that was a big game changer for me, the medal game, and I managed to win three individual world titles in the World Championships in 1974. And 15 medals total in that one competition, if you count the team events, and four world records. And we didn't rank shooters back then, but if you had ranked them, I would have moved up to number one. And we had a couple of number ones on our team. But I'd solved what was missing, and I pretty much kept it a secret for a while. And this was my secret, and I wasn't really interested in talking about it too much to other people. But in 1976, I made an Olympic team, won the tryout, go to Montreal, and I'm kind of in the same position that my teammate had been in 72 that won the gold medal. A lot of pressure. You're a reigning world champion and you're favored to win. There's a lot more pressure on you. And so if it was great vindication of the system that allowed me to win that gold medal in 76. And then 2 years later, I repeated as world champion in 78. And after the Olympics win, I decided to kind of let the cat out of the bag here and start picking up where I'd left off about talking to people about the mental game. And by that time, interest in the mental game had grown sufficiently to where they didn't look at you as being crazy for wanting to know more about this. So that was pretty much how I developed mental management.
We are totally grateful for you writing these books and developing the system. It's a book that I highly recommend to people. I've read it myself, actually twice. And yeah, just a very good book. Within the book, speaking of it, with winning in mind, can you go into the three parts of somebody's being, the conscious, the subconscious, and the self-image. And if somebody were to ask you, like, just a very quick summary of what each of those things are, how would you describe them?
Well, you know, most people train in a sport, and they think that, like I did, I thought that everything had to do with skill. And the skills happen in the subconscious realm. And you train, you start out with conscious skills, and then after you train for a long time, you develop, that things become automated, and they're, you know, you get better and better at it. And so the focus for most people is to get skilled and take a lesson and practice, take a lesson and practice. And that's the way you get skills. Well, the problem is that if you change what you think about, your skill level changes. So that's why the conscious mind is where your thoughts are. And thoughts are there are helpful and harmful thoughts. And I shot all through high school in my first 3 years all through high school and college. And I wasn't trying to choose the helpful ones. I pretty much thought about whatever popped into my head. And I think that most people do that to a large extent. And I found out that, you're a lot more consistent if you think about the helpful ones and avoid the harmful ones. And so there probably is a primary helpful one to think about. And then when I got around the top in the world, or the people in the world, I realized that that's not, that those two elements, what you picture, what you think about, and your skills, there's something else that if you want a complete picture of how performance is generated, performance is a function of three mental processes, and the third one is self-image. And self-image is your habits and attitudes. And the top people have a different attitude about, first of all, they're not trying to win. I think the people that are just under the top people, it's interesting to me. I mean, if the Lord lets me live one more year, I've been doing this full time for 50 years, this time next year. And I think that 95% of winning is accomplished by a very small number of people, maybe 5% of the participants. And the top 5%ers that dominate their sports are not trying to win. They're trusting that they will, and they're running a process that's consistent. And when that happens, they have a huge advantage over competitors that don't really have that attitude. And there's a lot to be said about the old saying attributed to Henry Ford: if you think you can or think you can't, you're right on both counts. And that's certainly what self-image is. My best definition of self-image is, let's say you and I are equally skilled in a sport and we're competing for a championship, and we have the same training, the same experience, the same equipment, the same everything. There's only one difference. You think you can beat me, and I think you can beat me. It's over for me. That's self-image. And there's a way that you can control your growth of self-image. I mean, every time you shoot a good shot, self-image grows. Every time you shoot a bad shot, self-image shrinks. Every time you think about shooting a bad shot, that shrinks. Every time you complain, it shrinks. Every time you think about the problem, it shrinks. That's why negative thinking doesn't work, or why positive thinking works. You know, people always tell you, you got to be positive, you got to be positive, but nobody ever told me why. Well, the reason why you need to be positive is your self-image grows and shrinks by imprinting. And if you're around negative people, you tend to be negative. And so you got to control who you're around. You got to control what you think about, what you complain about, or stop complaining. And when you write something, it improves the probability that you're going to do that. And if you write down your problems, you're just reinforcing your problems. You're proving the probability that it's like you to get them. So don't keep a diary. Keep a performance journal. You know, a diary is a lack of performance journal where you write down everything, good and bad, and everything that happened to you. And you just reinforced a lot. And these days, with everybody texting and social media and things like that, you have a lot of reinforcement, good and bad, by social media. And unfortunately, most people have a 24/7 entertainment machine in their pocket all the time. And when they're alone, they've got that out, and they're being conditioned by that piece of metal. And they're not conditioning themselves. They're being conditioned by whether you can be entertained by YouTube 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. I mean, it's a very entertaining, and it pulls you away from doing something maybe that's more worthwhile than watching. It's a far more powerful than television.
Oh,
and, but even television, with all the different apps on TV, you can just bury yourself in sports or bury yourself in something else. But I'm not saying that it's bad. If I didn't have the internet, I wouldn't have my business. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that. I'm just saying that you're not going to master a skill by spending too much time with your nose and in your phone, and you're going to have to apply yourself to pulling your, there's more temptation to be distracted for a young person today, someone your age, than there was for me when, we had three channels on TV and the screen wasn't all that clear anyway. not that much distraction, and a phone was something that was tied to the wall. And the phone was at a location, it wasn't on a person. So we had less distraction. I thought it was easier in some ways. This is the world we live in, and taking advantage of the advantages of technology is smart, but recognizing the disadvantages of technology is also smart. So that's what we try to do with our clients, and just tell them that you can control, but you're imprinting. You can control what you think about, what you talk about, what you write about, who you're around, who you hang with. If you match that up with goals, and you can be less distracted from your path that you big goals require discipline, and most people that start to college don't finish. And I believe that the major reason they don't finish is they get distracted, and they have too many distractions. They can't, and they're not disciplined enough to clear out the ones that are in the way. And that doesn't mean that you have to go to school. You can make a good living in America without a college degree. Yeah. But I had to have one to go in the Army Marksmanship Unit. And so I went to college, and I went to college twice. I went to college on ROTC scholarship, and I went to college paying for it myself. And the first time I went to school, I went to school to get out, and the second time I went to school to learn something, and that was a far more effective use of my time, I guess. But everybody that comes to us, they're looking for something. They're wanting to be consistent, and they want to win. They want to succeed, and so that's what we do, is we help them with the mental game.
To follow up with that, do you find that this system that you developed in your books and the mental management system, does it work better for individual sports like rifle shooting or wrestling or golf, or can it also be applied just as powerfully to team sports, you know, football, basketball, etc.?
Well, sport is either proactive or reactive, and some sports are both proactive and reactive. For example, rifle shooting, archery, golf, pool, some aspects of team sports, pitcher in baseball is proactive. When you serve in tennis, it's proactive, but when the ball's in play, it's reactive. Well, everything in about mental management, I think we can break what we teach down into seven modules, and six of those seven work for everybody. Doesn't matter if you're even in sport. Life is one big competition. And you're competing for a job, you're competing for a spouse, you're competing, you know, to keep your job, you're competing for promotions, you're interviewing for a job, or if you have to give a presentation somewhere, there's tension in life, and you need to have skills to be able to have a consistently good performance under pressure, and that's really what we teach. So the only one of my seven modules that's specific to it's you're running a mental system, which basically is determining the optimum thing to think about before, during, and after a task. If that task is a proactive task, it's more applicable to a sport like golf or archery or shooting than it is once the ball's in play in basketball or the ball. Team sports tend to have a highly proactive, a reactive element to them. So one seventh of what we teach is more applicable to a proactive sports, but the other six elements are equally applicable to, you know, I've taught pro football players, but not very many. And I've taught tons of golfers, tons of shooters, tons of archers. So I guess that's the area that we run in, but I've taught an awful lot of people that just want to have more control over what they do and who they become. And so I wouldn't say it's not applicable, for sure.
One last question, Lanny, kind of in regards to this realm. What would you say to somebody that has trouble just starting? So for example, if I take an example like golf, somebody comes up to you and wants to learn the mental game of their sport, golf, and they just don't know where to start. They need help putting, they need help chipping, they need help driving, they need help with their irons on the fairway. And it's almost kind of like an analysis by paralysis. They need to work on all those things, but they just have trouble picking one and starting with one and then working on the others. Have you ever experienced that with somebody? And what would you say to somebody like that to help them out?
Well, everybody who takes training from us all say the same thing when they finish training. I wish I'd known this sooner. Well, when sooner? Sooner is when you begin to learn a sport. You're making mental mistakes at the beginning. And if you paid some attention to proper mental form in the beginning of a sport, two things I can promise you is going to happen and give you an advantage over someone who doesn't do this. You're going to learn technique faster than someone who doesn't, who just decides, I'll think about the mental game after I've got a strong, after I know how to play. That's a mistake. You should learn how to control yourself. This is a skill. It's a life skill. It's not a shooting skill. It's not a learning how to respond appropriately to what happened. I mean, people destroy their self-image in the beginning because you're hitting a lot of bad shots in the beginning. And if you don't know how to respond to appropriately to a bad shot, you tend to reinforce a lot of bad shots, and pretty soon it becomes like you to hit the ball poorly. And it doesn't matter what you're studying or what you're training, what sport you're training, if you don't realize that every time you hit a shot, if you hit a good one, you need to reinforce that. If you hit a poor one, you need to think about, well, what would make it good? You need to understand their impact of responding appropriately. And when you misbehave or you make a mistake, you should start thinking, well, what's this teaching me? And how do I fix it so I don't make it again? You know, I'm really the only difference between the people who dominate their sports and the people who have trouble and live frustrated lives is they don't learn from their mistakes. You know, making mistake is not a mental error. Making mistake and learning from it is a requirement to get better. You should never be afraid to make a mistake. You don't have to try to make a mistake to learn. You're going to make plenty of them. But learning from your mistakes, is blaming other people, not taking accountability, all those kind of things are just avoiding doing what is correct. And everything that we do in life has three phases to it. It's an anticipation phase where you're preparing to do something, an action phase where you're doing it, and a reinforcement phase, what you think about just after you've done it. And so there are some strong things that everybody needs to know in the beginning. They need to know how performance is. I'll give you the two big ones. The first one is that performance is generated by three mental processes: conscious, subconscious, self-image. The second major concept is that everything we do in life has three phases: an anticipation phase, an action phase, a reinforcement phase. And those two concepts are related to each other. The anticipation phase is primarily a conscious process. The action phase is highly subconscious. And the reinforcement phase, how you respond to what just happened, builds or tears your self-image down. It either builds it up or tears it down, and it doesn't have anything to do with the result. The result you can build on a negative result if you're trying to correct what you just did. If you're learning from your mistakes and you're thinking about the solution and not the problem. If you're talking about the solution, not the problem. And for somebody that has some skills early on, they have a big advantage over the people that don't have it. And I'll tell you, the probability that people have these skills is almost non-existent. Because, let me ask you a question. Did you ever have? Did you graduate from high school?
Yes.
All right. Did you go to college?
Yes.
Okay. Did you graduate?
Yes.
Okay. In high school or college, did you ever have a course on how to think?
I don't think so.
Did you ever have a course on what the winners think?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah.
And what's interesting to me is that I know a lot of top 5 percenters, and every single one of them, PGA Tour winners, Olympic gold medalists, number one archer in the world, runs our system, the number one skeet shooter, and an American skeet shooter runs our system, and I've taught tons of PGA Tour players. And all of them, when I ask this question, what percentage of what you do is mental, they all say the same thing: my sport's 90% mental. And if that's 90%, then I ask them a second question. Well, since you've been doing it, what percentage of your time and money have you spent on the mental game? That's a very low number. Now, the more skilled a person is, the more successful a person is, there's a higher probability that they've spent some time on the mental game. And that's more and more likely as the acceptance of mental training has grown every year that I've been doing it. So it's never plateaued out or faded at all. It's always grown, and it's stronger today than it's ever been. But you've got But it's, we live in a negatively charged world where the mental game is not not emphasized like it should be. When it doesn't make sense to me that if the top people that are most successful people think it's 90% of their game, why isn't it taught in school? I'll tell you why it's not taught. First of all, there are three reasons. First of all, the teaching the mental game is harder to do than teaching form. You can demonstrate form. See that champion? See how he's holding a golf club? Hold it like that. Try this. See that champion? See what he's thinking? Try that. Think like that. You know, it's just harder. A lot of the most important factors of the mental game are hard to quantify, hard to video, hard to audio. But form is easy to do that. The second reason is that there's tons of form coaches, and most form coaches don't even attempt to tell an athlete how to think when they're doing something. They tell you here's how to hit a golf shot, you know, but they leave what you're thinking about up to you. Well, you don't know anything about what's the rest thing to think about. So that's the second thing. There's plenty of technical coaches and very few mental coaches out there. The third thing is it's a whole lot easier to just work on form. Working on yourself takes a little bit of courage. Nobody wants to do it. I don't want to change me. I want other people to change. I want the system to change. I want this environment to change. I don't want to change. I want to get away with my stinking thinking. And that's the reason why the mental game is, it requires some discipline and it requires focus for a person to master it. But it's a game changer for a lot of people. It certainly was for me.
Thank you very much again for spending time with me on this podcast and talking to me about your system and your book. One final thing for people who want to connect with you. Are you on any social media at all? I know you have your website for mental management systems.
My website is withwinninginmind.com. And the books are available. If you want to order from us, you can on mentalmanagement.com. And we have some products that are not available on Amazon, but my books are available on Amazon and Kindle and Audible. But I would say that the best way, if you want to learn something about mental management, is to go to the website and look around and see. And the other thing is we offer a free 20-minute consultation. And if people will send us an email at info@mentalmanagement.com, we will send you a scheduling link and be happy to talk to you about how we work with people. And we've got a Patreon program where For a very small fee, you can have access to a ton of mental management, a monthly membership thing. There's a lot of free stuff out there on the YouTube channel. And that's how you find out about mental management. And
awesome.
That's the best thing.
And I'll include links to your profiles and web pages in the description of the video. And thank you again for doing this. I really, really appreciate it. And For everybody else out there who is listening, thank you very much for listening. My name is Chris. This has been Chitesh. Take care, everybody.